The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to Report from Asia. This is Mike Consul with our guest, Leslie Chua. Mr. Chua is Senior Vice President, Director, and Head of Asia Pacific Investment Research at Heitman. He is also the author of the Market Perspective column in the February 2018 edition of Institutional Real Estate Asia Pacific, in which he makes the case that specialty property types are a key element of smart portfolio construction. He joins us by phone from Hong Kong to discuss his thoughts on the matter. Leslie Chua, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Now, as I said, you're an advocate of specialty property types in the Asian marketplace. Explain why.
Well, specialty property types offer investors a rare combination of yields that exceed those of traditional property types. It also gives these particular asset class a very defensive characteristic in your operations, and it also enhances diversification. And what we've realized that over the years of investing in this particular asset class is that they tend to perform well across the cycle. And what we've come to realize that as an allocation to these property types, and these include data centers, medical facilities, senior housing, self-storage and student accommodation, they are actually an important component when you are constructing your portfolio. I think in the Asia-Pacific region, you know, what we have identified is opportunities to work with best-in-class operators in markets with strong population growth, including markets that have high density and markets that are undersupplied, and so they present opportunities for either consolidation or operational improvements, or in fact both.
You know, it's interesting because the specialty property types that you mentioned also perform very well in North America and in Europe. Let me ask you, though, Asia is a very big region, and there's a lot of countries there, some of which are pretty well developed and others that are less so. Which Asian nations in particular do you consider especially ripe for investment dollars pouring into some of these specialty real estate types?
What we've seen is that you are right to point out that it is a very diversified market, and there are clearly multiple locations. But what we've also identified is that some of these markets do exhibit the structural and cyclical attributes that predict success, for example, in self-storage investment, and they include favorable demographic trends, high population density, increasing residential and commercial costs. And so what that results is, for example, is the need for self-storage facilities. And we see these in expensive markets like Hong Kong, Tokyo, Singapore, Seoul, and the eastern seaboard of Australia.
Let's talk about the capital flows into these specialty real estate categories. Are they very popular already? Are you seeing a lot of money going in that direction? Are the prices getting pumped up at this point, Leslie? Or is there still a lot of upside opportunity? Is it an opportunity that's being missed right now by a lot of investors?
Specialty property is a little bit different from traditional real estate classes because in many ways it's an operator-intensive play where you need to be working with an operator that understands not only the asset class but also the business to operate these facilities, whether it's for self-storage or for student accommodation. And what tends to happen, like many markets for new asset classes in many new markets, is that these asset classes tend to pop up in the more mature markets first. So, to the example of self-storage as well as student accommodation, we see that in Australia. And then slowly it grows into other markets that have a need for it due to structural issues or cost issues. So in the case of self-storage, in Hong Kong, Tokyo and Singapore, we've seen a proliferation of this particular asset class of self-storage.
You know, and I want to ask you about the durability of these particular investment categories, because when you talk about data centers, I think, you know, data centers are going to do nothing but grow. When I think about student housing, there's new colleges and universities popping up all the time in the developing world. It would seem that that would be a very durable property type. And then you mentioned self-storage as people accumulate things, as they have more wealth. Self-storage becomes a more and more, you know, needed piece of real estate. Would you concur that it sounds like these particular property types are ones that are going to stand the test of time, at least for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, that's very true. So let's start with self-storage. What we're starting to see in the Asia-Pacific markets is that tenant demand is on the rise, largely because of the higher density in these markets. So, for example, in Tokyo, for example, the self-storage business is still in its infancy. You know, it has a nation of 128 million people that occupy an area smaller than the state of California, for example. And typical homes in Tokyo are small. They average about 60 square meters or 650 square feet or so. And, you know, when you look at the cost or the cost of owning a home, is 10 times the average annual income in Tokyo. Clearly, self-storage then makes a lot of sense. Now, and what you also notice in many of these cases is that as income wealth grows and home density increases, clearly the need for self-storage then is in the larger cities. So places like Singapore, Hong Kong, Sydney, Melbourne are very prime examples for where self-storage is growing. And when you start to look at student housing, you have a different set of demand drivers. For one, rapid wealth creation is clearly leading to an increasing number of globally mobile students seeking higher quality education. More importantly, in countries like China and India, education is priced, as you know, and so what they tend to do is try to find other markets or send their children to other markets where they see there's more work opportunity. And so, you know, traditionally it's been in the US and in the UK, but the Australian universities have also grown up in terms of, I mean, have increased in the ranks in terms of their popularity as well as their academic results. And so you've seen a lot more students flowing into Australia, and as a result of that, that has generated the demand for PBSA or purpose-built student accommodation. And when you look at the other asset classes, I mean, you know, it's all about it being demand-driven. Clearly, with data centers, with the growth of cloud and everything being digitized right now, that is only a natural progression into the development of data centers. And you've seen the proliferation of that. And a lot of it is more a function of that being demand-led than supply-led. And I think that actually supports the market a lot better than when it's more than when it becomes more supply-led.
Now, you also write about the risks that are involved with any kind of real estate, there comes risk. And with regard to specialty property types, what are some of the things that you would warn investors about?
For one, typically the barriers of entry are high. Firstly, because the asset class is still fairly new in the market. Secondly, it is important to find a partner who understands the business and how and knows how to run the business. And I think when you have the combination of someone understanding the barriers of entry and a partner to work with that understands the business, I think the opportunities there then lay ahead for you. And what we've come to realize over the years of involvement in both student housing as well as in self-storage is that property yields in these newer asset classes tend to be higher than traditional asset classes. And so there's a good arbitrage play in that. And hence, you know, it becomes an important source of portfolio construction, but more importantly, a form of diversification in your portfolio construction. And it also enhances your returns.
So if an investor is looking to commit some dollars to specialty real estate types in Asia as a means of diversifying their real estate portfolio, as you had just alluded to, what makes sense in terms of a target allocation, with at least within a real estate portfolio, you might think in terms of for specialty real estate?
I think typically when investors start off in the specialty asset class and in their, as part of their portfolio construction, they normally go with a lower allocation, somewhere between 5 to 10%, largely because, first of all, the investment universe is very small. And secondly, it's more demand-driven and need-driven than it is anything to do with existing supply, unless it's a conversion of a current asset. And what we realize is that once the investors get comfortable with the asset class, we do see them increasing allocation, and they typically can double that allocation to about 20% or so. And that really does enhance the portfolio construction in terms of one, diversification, improving the return profile, and I think thirdly, more importantly, it deepens the pool of an already fairly small investable universe in this part of the world.
Our guest has been Leslie Chua, Senior Vice President, Director, and Head of Asia Pacific Investment Research at Heitman. He is the author of the Market Perspective column in the February 2018 edition of Institutional Real Estate Asia Pacific, where you can read a fuller treatment on this subject that Leslie wrote about. Leslie, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you very much for hosting me. I appreciate that.